guys, this episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Internet, and welcome to this live episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're live at the UCB Theater on Sunset pitching some movie sequels. You know movie sequels. Their trailers are the most exciting thing happening online these days. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and other things that are a bummer. Star Wars 7, the out-of-breath Stormtrooper. Those just released trailers that burned through the internet like alien blood. I got pretty excited about the trailer for Jurassic World with the pterodactyls plucking tourists out of fleeing crowds like it's gonna be Birds meets Jaws, or Jurassic Park 4, Jaws 3, Birds 2. God willing. Well, today we're going to pitch what-if movie sequels that we didn't get but wish we had, and I want to talk about an old Cracked article, actually, up top from back in 2008 called The Most Depressing Happy Endings in Movie History by two writers, Rick Kay and Colm P. We don't make our writers disguise their last names in syllables. That was their choice. Always humbling when people who write for our site are like, yeah, this was fun, but let's not tell anybody about it. I have real friends, family that respects me. I want to get a job. Anyways, that one article did a bunch of things. It started the conversation that became the first episode of After Hours by pointing out how horrifying the ending of Back to the Future was. And it also predicted the premise of Toy Story 3 2 years before that movie came out. It pointed out how depressing the ending of Toy Story 2 was. If you don't remember that movie, Woody gets stolen by a collector, finds out he's actually a rare toy from the 50s because he meets up with other Old West cowboy toys from his line that have been alive since then and awake and conscious. And while they're at it, they're like, oh, and by the way, Andy's gonna outgrow you. Life is misery and suffering. Welcome to the gang! But because it's a Hollywood movie, by the time the credits roll in Toy Story 2, Woody's escaped back to Andy, and Andy still loves him, and he brings the hot cowgirl and his horse, less hot, still cool though, with him, and Woody assures all the other toys, even if Andy outgrows them, they'll always have each other. And back in 2008, Colm and Rick pointed out that that's not necessarily true. They had to drive a truck to get back together when Andy's mom accidentally gives him away. Once Andy doesn't care about them at all, there's an eternity for them to get split up at a Goodwill store or a garage sale that his mom actually intentionally sells them at. And I mean a literal eternity because the toys are fucking immortal, you guys. Woody and his posse are 50 years old. The doll head that neighbor kid ripped off and put on an erector set spider is fully conscious for the whole horrifying ordeal. And in the article, we pointed out how horrifying that is. And it's one of my favorite points ever made in one of our articles, and it was so good Pixar made that the premise of Toy Story 3, sort of. In Toy Story 3, they almost get incinerated in a garbage furnace, which seemed pretty dark for a kid's movie, but last week I heard a segment of This American Life about how Americans refuse to incinerate their garbage and dump everything in landfills, unlike Europe, which gets rid of it and burns it all. Americans don't do that. And that made me realize that Toy Story 3 actually didn't embrace the really existentially horrifying possibility raised by the second movie and that article back in 08. There's this part in Toy Story 2 when Woody's cowgirl friend shivers at the memory of being kept in storage in a box for years. And that's where my toys were the last time I saw them, taped inside a cardboard box before we moved when I was like 7. And that This American Life segment made me realize that they're probably still in that box, just like 100 feet below the surface of a landfill in Wheeling, West Virginia. So Toy Story 3 didn't really embrace the horror at the center of its universe. Rick and Colm got at it in their article. And even though that trash incinerator seemed dark for a kid's movie, they invented that so you wouldn't have to think about Woody and his friends or your own childhood toys, fully conscious and slowly going insane in the dark 40 feet below the surface of a landfill somewhere forever. The toys of the Toy Story universe are the most existentially damned sentient beings ever to gain self-awareness, unless, and this is where my pitch comes in, they refuse to be trapped, and one of the toys is like the Andy Dufresne of that box and uses all that time to saw his way out and climb upwards through like wrapping paper, tube chimneys, and boxes of other toys and trash from what would seem like the future to them. Everything above them was thrown out after them, so it would, they'd be climbing through a futuristic wasteland. And the further they climb, the further into their future the garbage is from. And what they find when they get to the surface might shock you. Find out when I pitch that idea in about 20 minutes. And after we recorded this episode, actually, I found a pretty cool Pixar Easter egg on Reddit that ties into this sequel slash fan theory that I'll share with you in the footnotes section. Another sequel premise raised in that 08 article that we don't pitch during this episode is actually an idea for Star Wars 7. Seems like we should have maybe brought that one up, but we're bad at our jobs. Colm and Rick came up with the perfect sequel to Return of the Jedi back in 08, back when most people hadn't even heard of Star Wars, you guys. But no, they pointed out that after Luke and Han and Leia and the rest of the rebels kill Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine, blow up the Death Star again, it's not really a happy ending. I mean, the good news is they've restored balance to the Force, which, now that we've had some time to think about it, we can all agree is a phrase that means nothing. Less good news is that nobody's ever suggested anywhere in the Star Wars universe that the Empire was, like, overly reliant on those two clowns. If anything, they'd proven themselves to be bad at leading an evil empire. Not the most strategically flexible military tacticians. Nobody's really ever suggested that the Empire is anything other than huge and powerful and extremely well-armed. So killing their leader actually creates what's known in the realm of international relations as a power vacuum. And that's bad. It's the reason America sits back and lets dictators dictate. Power vacuums are like grotesquely violent prison yard riots where everyone kills each other until one of them proves he's the best person at murder, and everyone else is like, okay, God, you win at murder. You're the best at murder. We'll do whatever you say. Just stop murdering. And then that sound is them being murdered because the best at murder just murdered them because that's what he does. Now he's president. That's how you elect a president in a power vacuum. And when it's a big country, you really don't want its most biblically evil murder genius taking over, because that exact scenario has given us such hits as Adolf Hitler, Russia's former premier of KGB murder and current president, Vladdy Poots. And that would make a great central conflict for Episode 7. The Empire in original Star Wars clearly symbolized the Soviet Union with its drab outfits and pale skin and lack of advertising anywhere on the Death Star. So maybe that's what we'll see. Maybe we'll see the rise of Darth Putin. They also suggested a sequel to the 2006 movie Superman Returns that I would easily take over whatever is happening in that Batman vs. Superman trailer. If you don't remember that movie, a lot of people don't, Superman Returns was an early color film with sound. It was a talkie. It was a sequel to the first two Superman movies with Christopher Reeves. Bryan Singer was coming off X2. Basically, he did what we're doing in this episode. He was like, I've got an idea for a sequel to a franchise I had nothing to do with. And the premise is Superman's been missing since the end of Superman 2, flying around in space, looking for Kryptonians like him who survived. And Lois Lane's moved on at the beginning of the movie. She's married with a son who has asthma. So Superman's like, whew, dodge that bullet. But twist, in a key moment, the crippled kid saves his mom's life by throwing a piano at someone and murdering them, I think. And Superman saves the overall day somehow, sort of wakes up from a coma, breaks into Lois's house, and walks over to the son he abandoned years ago and is like, you're my son, huh?
peace,
and flies off into space again. And that's how it ends. And Colm and Rick pointed out that is the perfect fucking supervillain origin story. Half human, half Superman, who's been screwed over by his dad, Superman. It also raises this idea that superpowers can be transferred through bodily fluids and genetics, opening the possibility for, I don't know, potential superhero blood doping and genetic manipulation. I don't know. It seems like it set up a really interesting universe, and instead we've got this bullshit. Anyways, you've probably got the hang of it. Just because Bryan Singer fucked up his sequel to a 20-year-old movie franchise he had nothing to do with shouldn't stop us from suggesting awesome ideas for sequels to other people's movies. So that's what we're about to do. Hope you enjoy it. It's a live episode at UCB, and we'll be back at the end with that Pixar Easter egg and footnotes. Talk to you then. Welcome to a live episode of the Crack Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Crack. Thank you. I'm joined on stage by my co-host, Mr. Michael Swain.
Howdy.
Crack's head of video, Mr. Daniel O'Brien. No relation. And
best co-host for last, Sword Buoy.
You notice he upgraded me from occasional to just straight co-host. It's official tonight, I think.
Three amigos, three co-hosts,
oh,
and Dan.
Oh, boy. All right.
I had a whole bit prepared where I mispronounced your name and pretended like I didn't know who you were, but you really jumped on that, Sauron. That's how I was going to pronounce it. It was going to be hilarious. So this is going to be like kind of a normal podcast, except at the end we're going to ask you guys to participate, and we'll tell you how at that point. But the subject of today's episode is going to be post-movie implications that are more interesting than the movie. So basically, awesome sequels that haven't happened yet.
Right, but, movies that are implied by like the epilogue that we wish existed.
All right, so we're going to start with a for instance. Are people familiar with the Christopher Nolan film The Prestige?
Yeah!
Two 1890s magicians battling it out.
Oh, like, you lost me.
Well, they have to figure out how to do like the ultimate 1890s trick, which is like go from there to over there. And one of the magicians hires Nikola Tesla to create a teleportation machine to do that trick because he's a bad magician. And Tesla's like, sure, I'll take your money. And he agrees to like do the work, but then just like fucks around and creates like a matter replicating machine.
I think it's important to point out that Tesla is played by David Bowie. And if you've never heard of this movie, what we're saying sounds completely insane right now.
You know that delightful thing where you are aware of something but had no idea? I thought Tesla was the magician. I had no idea that Tesla was not like, yeah, science, but my first love, magic, of course. We close up hand tricks.
But anyways, the magician's like, what is this clone bullshit? I said teleportation, and then Tesla disappears from the movie. He's like, don't tell anyone about the cloning machine. We'll get in trouble. And he's kind of driven out of the movie because Thomas Edison.
You call him Tommy. You can call
Tommy
him
Tommy. Ed, his
Tommy
goons show up and like burn down his lab. And
Thomas Edison's hired goons burn down the lab.
The scariest goons in history.
Steal all those cats.
And are they like real steel cyberpunk guys that he invented, I assume, having not seen it?
Have you really not seen it?
No. That's the ultimate prestige, yeah. So the setup is I pitch it at the meeting.
Right.
This is the second phase, and the prestige is I've never seen that film. I'm sorry.
So Tesla disappears in the rest of the movie. He's just this terrible magician, like, trying to figure out how to pretend he's teleporting with a matter replicator instead of, I don't know, becoming the most powerful person in the world.
Right, it's all about this feud that he has with Christian Bale's magician, and at no point did it occur to him, oh, Christian Bale, cool, you made that baldest beard. Well, guess what? There's fucking 9 of me now.
Right. Yeah. Look at all these hats. Were the hats, like, driving? I thought at first, because I was very stupid when I saw this movie, I really thought it was, like, fueled by hats. That was what I took away from it.
There the machine, so the replicator hats. Machine was fueled by hats?
Not right.
Does he lose his hat when he goes through it?
No, the thing is,
haven't seen the
Tesla. Tesla tests the machine on hats first. They're like, it's too dangerous to try it with man, so let's just put a hat in the machine. And they zap it.
And it comes out as half fly, half hat.
Right, yeah. It's just like some monster hat that's like, kill me!
But I do feel like that's an example of a movie that left a lot on the table, maybe. The whole Edison-Tesla feud, and they just go with magic. Bad magician.
Yeah, the fact that he uses this the most amazing thing ever invented for a stupid illusion and drowns the former version of himself. Right. Is, I would say, a misuse of that power, yeah.
And never tells anyone what it does or how it works or what's going on, and then he just dies.
In fact, has blind people working the job so that they won't even know. Yeah.
Right. Like, from the very start, this incredible leap in technology is treated as, like, oh, it's broken. It doesn't teleport, it just, like, creates a second one. Shit. We have to cover this up somehow.
It can only make an infinite amount of anything. Let's just burn it.
Right.
And it would have been so amazing to see a movie that followed through with that, with the machine back in Tesla's hands, because if anyone's familiar with the actual current wars that happened with Tesla and Edison, Tesla was, and a few others were behind AC current, and Edison wanted to ruin that. He wanted everyone to use his DC current, so he had people murder a whole bunch of animals. This is all actually true. They had stray cats and dogs and other animals that they found, and they were like, AC is bad, it kills animals. See, look, I just killed this animal. He just murdered these animals as a demonstration to ruin Nikola Tesla, and... If this dream movie that we're imagining could happen, then Tesla's like, oh, cute trick, you cool, killed that cat. Well, I just made 19 more of it with my with my thing. So yeah, keep killing Edison. I've got an army of cats.
Edison famously filmed himself electrocuting an elephant just to show, like, what, I guess, a larger animal it could kill. And I just think that's a great opening movie is, Mr. Edison, we've let the elephant in, you may electrocute it now. Yeah. I mean, how do you get a better villain than that?
It was such a different time when that was propaganda, where Edison is Edison himself is murdering an elephant, and like, look how bad Tesla is!
Do you see? Quid pro quo.
The movie you're describing is basically the same thing as The Prestige. It's like, now it's Edison, Tesla, and Edison is just trying to kill cats, and Tesla is making new cats. They're not making food or something like that.
Well, no, except the battle is for the future of the world, because, like, Edison won, and I don't know, his name's on all our shit now, and instead they're just like, I got the magic trick now. I'm the best at magic.
Well,
that was a good impression, by the way.
Perfect David Bowie.
Yeah.
I thought it was Bowie. But... Also, so I haven't seen the movie, but I do research Tesla a lot for some reason. And a thing that's true about him is he died thinking a pigeon was one of his dearest friends and that they communicated and the pigeon could shoot lasers out of its eyes. And I think in the movie they should just literalize that, like have him be right about that. And have that go against Edison's, I guess, like electrified zombie Frankenstein elephant. It's like a good second act centerpiece, I think.
So yeah, Tesla ride again on an army of cloned elephants as Edison runs away in terror.
Or tries to slightly improve upon the cloning technology and patent it and just win a marketing war. Yeah. Sorry, that sounds like a more boring sequel. Realistic, though. Which is why it's not how we remember history. It's fucking boring.
All right, who wants to go next?
I want to talk about the movie Ghost. I have a few that I could touch on, but if people are familiar with the movie Ghost, I'm going to explain the plot anyway.
You can't touch a ghost, silly.
The whole premise of Ghost is that you can, by the end, touch a ghost.
Right, that's what we learned.
And the only scene I'm familiar with proves that, so I apologize. Cheerfully withdrawn.
So Patrick Swayze is a man, and then he gets killed, and he becomes a ghost, and he wanders around, and...
Oh, you lost me.
Unfinished business, and he's still in love with Demi Moore, and...
I feel like you could be telling this as a ghost story instead. Yeah. There's this guy, and he has this girlfriend.
This phenomenal dancer.
And she says, I love you, and he says, ditto.
So he finds... He finds out a couple things. A, there are other ghosts who are walking around and doing ghost stuff, and some of them have learned to be able to manipulate physical objects. B, he finds a medium, Whoopi Goldberg, who he can actually speak to and through. Like, he can enter her and talk to his wife again, and through a series of ridiculous things, solves his own murder, and reconnects with his wife one last time, and he dances as Whoopi Goldberg with her, and it's weird, but beautiful, and
more
pure.
More than dances, or is that your word for... They?
Dancing is the closest two adults can get, right? Is there a step two?
Oh, Daniel, so much to learn.
And by the end, he has his tearful goodbye, where Demi Moore actually gets to see his face again, and he ascends to what we assume is heaven, or just another plane, and Demi Moore goes on about her life. And then the movie ends, and that's fucking insane. Because everyone learns that ghosts are real, and Whoopi Goldberg learns that she's the only one in the world who can talk to them. And she's just supposed to go on about her life after that. I desperately want the follow-up movie that is Whoopi Goldberg is like, ghosts, come to me, I'm real, and I'm going to go around and help you finish your unfinished business. I'll dance with anyone, I don't give a shit.
So The Sixth Sense, but with Whoopi
right,
Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg's realized
that. It's a huge improvement, I agree.
But worse than that, she's a ghost prostitute. They just go through her, or she's the ghost hotel where prostitutes go, I assume.
Thank you.
Getting convoluted, but okay.
Because she's the vehicle for the sex with somebody in limbo.
Ooh. Yeah.
She's also. She would always have sex with
I don't think
people.
She needs to have sex with everybody, but I haven't figured out the whole movie yet. So obviously some. Obviously
sure the ghosts
few.
Are going to have something to say. They're going to be like, we really need to have sex to solve this crime.
Right, because there are some ghosts who will have unfinished business, like, I want to find my murderer, or I want to solve this puzzle. And some of them were like, I think I'm sticking around here because I never had sex with like 9 people that I really wanted to. Whoopi Goldberg, you're my only hope. Her name is Whoopi Goldberg in the sequel, by the way. I just made a better name. Also, Soren and I were talking about this earlier, and he pointed out that in this sequel, the B-plot of the sequel, I suppose, Demi Moore has no reason to stick around on the Earth, right? I mean, I'm not pitching a movie where it opens and Demi Moore's like, oh, I'm gonna kill myself. But she knows that ghosts are real and that Patrick Swayze is waiting for her. No one's going to live up to his expectations. She can't move on because right. She'll meet another guy who's really nice. Like, yeah, my last guy was so nice that he came back from the dead to save me.
Physically ascended to heaven.
Yeah,
the whole plot of the movie is that they're so in love that, like, love conquers even this one person's death, and they can still touch or meet one another after that happens. And now she knows that there's an afterlife. Like, how do you go on living knowing that the person that you love more than anything in the world has moved on, and that there really is a moved on, like that there's this other life that you can just go to.
But also, suicide is a sin, so she would have to get a friend to murder her.
Right, that's how it works, that if that would be this happy. Is in fact heaven, and we are following Bible rules, she can't get into heaven if she kills herself, so she just has to wait to die.
There's, I mean, Patrick Swayze does do a pretty good job of helping his murderer into death, so I feel like if you can just find a ghost whose one thing he still has to do on Earth is kill Demi Moore, you just gotta find that guy. That solves everything. That's what this goes to.
Murder solves everything.
I also just want a movie about the other ghosts because Patrick Swayze is really hell-bent on his agenda. And there's another ghost who is just hanging out in a train, just being a ghost. Who's like, this is fun.
Knocking over groceries every
just
day.
Knocking things down.
He's such a dick.
And he's got a sister who like prays to him all the time. He's like, please find our parents' murderer. And he's like, nah, I'm going to flip coins. Piss off other ghosts. You can't do it.
And see, I always thought Ghostbusters was a perfectly good sequel to Ghost. May I transition?
You may.
Hopefully to a movie.
This is how it's always going to go. Yeah,
you may
Jack,
smoothly transition.
May I? May I segue?
We always cut that out.
Very well. I wanted to talk a little bit about Interstellar, and I won't explain the plot too much because we'd be here until the thing is over. But it involves someone falling into a black hole, which, as everyone who knows anything knows, is something we've never done. We don't know what would happen, but one thing we're pretty sure of is you wouldn't live and gain time powers. But that's indeed what happens to Matthew McConaughey, and he enters this thing that is like a tesseract that allows you to both see through time and use gravity as a force across time to affect things. And then he gets out of it, and the main things the movie focuses on are how, like, he pushed some books around when his daughter was little, and then Matt Damon got lonely. And I just think there's, like, no point where he comes out and he's like, oh my God, I know what happens inside a black hole, and it's time travel, and now everything about cause and effect is meaningless, and everyone send all your spaceships to the black hole and start racing to who can go further back in time and make themselves king of the universe, because that's the game now. And I think that's more interesting than Interstellar. Yeah.
I agree.
He saved humanity, though?
He does save humanity, and then he as a scientist who a scientist should want to give information to the people. That's part of what their jobs are, among murdering elephants and the like. And instead, he just decides, like, I'm going to go on an adventure. I'm going to, you know what was great? Anne Hathaway. I'm going to check in with her on her planet.
Yeah, that's
right. And other scientists are like, you know what would be helpful, though, is mastery of time. Do you know a guy?
Might help with settling the new planet, actually, if we can go back in time and make it exactly the same as Earth, thousands of years
ago. Right, you went back in time to, like, reconnect with your daughter, and that's nice. Go back further, stop our planet from dying, and have so much more time with your daughter.
You also get a reset button on anything you create from now on. That, like, if any at any point you deviate and things start to go wrong, you can just go, oh, we should go back and just do that part over again.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I think it might be mildly implied that aliens may have consciously created the possibility that he's in there. Again, I haven't seen the movie, but... No, this one I did. It just, like, fell asleep for a bit. But that too, if that's a thing, that too. Wake up from your coma and go, I love you, daughter. Also, there's aliens, and they can time travel and affect gravity. So start building weapons, I guess. This is how movies have trained me, you guys. That'd I'm like, who will be the best magician?
That would be so amazing if Matthew McConaughey came back and was like, oh yeah, we gotta kill them all. That's too much power. I mean, look what I did with it.
And I'm always like, man, what's a dope magic trick I could do with this? I gotta figure something out. Saw a woman in half or something.
But he doesn't explain, like, he doesn't tell anybody what's happened to him, does he?
It's possibly safe to presume that, like, as a scientist, he'd get around to it eventually. Right. But yeah, he is, it's an Indiana Jones syndrome. He is immediately like, I just want to get back out on the road, man, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's probably tons of movies that are just flagrantly irresponsible with, like, amazing discoveries, and they're just like, but we did it all for love, and that's all that matters.
Can I talk about one of those, Jack?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
May Soren segue, Jack?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Approved.
I want to talk about a movie. It's actually a franchise called Indiana Jones. I don't know if you've seen it. The premise is that there's an adventurer who's actually a teacher, and... He goes off and
except he's actually not.
He's a very bad teacher. He's a bad teacher and a bad archaeologist. Bad at everything that he does. And he goes off and he finds these supernatural artifacts and then hides them away forever so no one can ever see them again. And throughout the movies, we find out that Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, he finds out that there is a god and that it's the Christian god and that... The Bible, the Old, New Testament is all right. So he knows that there's a God. And then in the next movie, in Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, he finds out that there are aliens, too. And those two things seem like they'd be opposed, in my mind. Unless...
Or at least their existence would warrant further examination.
Yeah, or as Dan pointed out to me earlier, that maybe God is an alien. And so now... I would love to see another movie after all of those where it's just Harrison Ford dealing with that and coming to terms with the fact that we were created potentially by an alien species just to see what happens and that we call that God and that we had one in our midst in Jesus.
Right, and that specifically, he's not just some guy. It's not a plumber stumbling on this existence and being like, I'm not the man to dispense this information. His job is to go out and find things and share them with the people. And he just looks at it as like, Ark of the Covenant, bunch of demons flying around. Better box this up forever and not tell anyone.
Save this in a warehouse.
As long as it still features Shia LaBeouf swinging with monkeys,
I'm
on board. Okay, great.
So Crystal Skull ends, he finds out there are aliens, and then is like, you know what I should do? I should get married. And he goes and he gets married.
Yeah.
And he's just gonna like live out the rest of his life. I want the next movie to be his trial. Like, Short Round grows up and is like, look at all this shit you found. When were you gonna tell anyone? You found a cup to grant eternal life? What do you do? I dropped it down a hole and I ruined that night's whole day.
Also, you put me in some very dangerous situations when I was a child. I never got over that. I watched people die. But yeah, just him with his wife sitting at home, really trying to figure out what all that means. That there's both a god and aliens.
So the aliens wrote the New Testament? Is that what we're to assume?
I don't know.
Let's
what
really
else.
Work this out.
I think it's possible that they advised on it.
All right, well, you guys, we're within shouting distance of the Scientology Center, so be right. Careful here.
So we can just
when the that. Aliens wrote the Bible stuff, all right?
Guys, I don't have to tell you that a shitty looking and terribly functioning website can mess up your whole business and personal life. It can mess up your whole game. People like to click on pretty things. And if it takes more than 10 seconds to load a page, they're going to be out, which is tough because building a website can be tough. And even if you do know your way around coding, creating something that looks good and works is time consuming and annoying. Squarespace provides simple, powerful, and beautiful website templates for you to work with. Not only that, but those templates are part of Squarespace's responsive design, which means your websites scale to look great on any device, which further minimizes the hassle of making a website on your own. You also get a free online store if you need it. Perhaps you need something minimalistic but powerful? Well, their cover page feature also allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. And when you do decide to finally get around to signing up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code CRACK to get 10% off your first purchase, and you'll show support for the Cracked Podcast. And yeah, thanks Squarespace for helping out the Cracked Podcast. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Guys, I'd like to introduce you to our sponsor, Xero. The truth behind starting your own business is 8 out of 10 small businesses fail within the first year. Many of them fail due to poor accounting. I don't have to tell you that. We're both good accountants. But let's face it, not everyone is a math genius. Not everyone cares to remember basic math learned in third grade, like you and I do. Minds are steel traps, but there are those other people. And that's why they came up with Xero, X-E-R-O. Xero is beautiful accounting software built to help small businesses be more productive and successful. And it's easy to use. You can send invoices, online quotes to your customers, pay your employees, manage your cash flow, expenses, and even your inventory with Xero. It basically does everything you need to do to keep your business floating along so you can focus on the fun stuff, like creating cakes that look like celebrities or whatever it is you do. That was secretly me pitching a business idea and just kind of trying to gauge your reaction. Another great thing about Xero is it's in the cloud, so you can access and manage all your business accounting wherever you are. Basically does what desktop software does, but way more. And you can use it anywhere at any time from any device, mobile or otherwise. If you're working and traveling, you can send invoices easily on the go. Clients can pay online instantly. And now, because you're hearing this, and don't tell anyone else, guys, but you can sign up for a free 30-day trial at Xero.com/podcasts. Xero is a beautiful accounting software built to help small businesses be more productive and more successful. Sign up for a free 30-day trial today at Xero.com/podcasts. I guess I don't.
You want to do Wall-E?
Yeah.
Miguel?
Sure. You guys seen Wall-E? So, in case you haven't, it's about a robot named Wall-E, who's like a trash compactor robot, and a bunch of stuff happens, it's wonderful, and everyone here has seen it. And then, at the end, all the big fat humans come down to Earth, and Wall-E, Jesus, is back, because of love. It's always because of love, it's fine. We're fine with it. And then Peter Gabriel sings, and there's a montage of we do history again. We just are like, fine, we'll just do that again. And I envision a more realistic sequel that is much more akin in tone to like the newer Battlestar Galactica series, because there has to be a faction of giant fat people who are raised to never do anything, who were told, yeah, we need to dig that mud and make it into bricks and build those into spears, who go, nah, I'm getting back on the ship, man. No, I'm not down with that. So I think what we don't see in the credits montage is a small faction of people who use technology to like reign supreme, or at least wage war on the people who are trying to rebuild. I mean, maybe there's some kind of Wally Messiah cult in there. I'm trying to tie it to more Battlestar Galactica stuff, but I do think the robot that came from Earth to space and in your mind, like, saved the human race, died and came back to life, there would be some kind of weird relationship with that robot. I don't think Wally is just going to go back and be like, okay, I'll be over here doing trash stuff, you guys. Humanity.
Yeah, that's even implied in the credit sequence, right? That, like, he has, like, some sort of messiah.
Or, it shows him, like, cutely helping out and always being a part of it. But I don't see how he's not either the Deathbringer who brought us from our space mansion down to this hell pit, or, you know, like the hippie messiah that made us all realize we gotta go back and simplify, man.
Yeah, but there's nothing new that they can really learn from him. Like, even the people, that cult would die out pretty quickly. They were like, what should we do today, Robot Jesus? Oh, stack little things together again? Okay.
Did you see this 30-second clip from a 20s movie? We've seen it, Wally. Yeah. We don't care.
We're trying to write a new Bible, and you're making it very difficult.
Right, it's also they've had immediate gratification their entire lives. Today, if they want to be somewhere, a little cart takes them there at 30 miles an hour. So to the thought of them actually trying to grow beans or something is
right.
Great, because they'd bury it and be like, well, it's not fucking working, let's go.
Right, and then people are like, oh, you know, Wally says this is the way to do it. Oh, the thing that we built to love working wants to keep working? Okay. No.
So we have this theory. I don't know how many people here are familiar with the unified Pixar movie universe that we've discussed on past episodes and after hours. But one example that I don't think we've dug into is how Toy Story 4 should lead directly to Wall-E, the apocalypse that sends humans up into space in the first place. So we had talked after Toy Story 2 about how there's this sort of existential nightmare in the center of the Toy Story universe because those toys last forever. There are toys from the 50s right now that are still just sentient and wishing that the kid who owned them would still play with them even though he's like 75 years old.
They're behind a radiator, yeah. I mean, you can be taken apart and reassembled with other toys and you're still alive.
Right.
In toy logic.
It's terrifying. But the thing that they did in Toy Story 3 to acknowledge that is they had all the toys like getting sent into an incinerator, which would presumably, they wouldn't exist after that. But if you listen to last week's This American Life...
Let's play a clip, shall we?
Yeah.
You know, we got those rights.
Like 99.9%
they're on earwolf,
garbage
right?
is not incinerated. So all those toys are just in the earth, like just in a landfill somewhere, still sentient. And so the movie that I want to see is the toys that I played with in the 80s, He-Man, but mostly She-Ra, like breaking out of the box with all the He-Man toys that she's stuck down there with and joining up with, maybe a Teddy Ruxpin, although he's probably disintegrated by now.
But oh my God.
That's better because then he's just like the T2 skeleton
right.
Constantly playing a garbled cassette tape. That's great.
But that's
I'm not sure why Jack is making... I'm not sure what qualifies you to make judgment calls about what toys wouldn't make it. You love your He-Man so much, like, oh, Teddy Ruxpin, oh, fuck that guy.
But he can't hack it in the world of the Masters of the Universe, bro.
We'll discuss the which toys make it and which don't. Probably She-Ra and Skeletor, but I don't know. I had a limited childhood. But so they have to fight their way up through the landfill, and like each new layer has demented versions of more recent toys because they've just been trapped there the whole time. And then they get to the surface, or there's some event that like, you know, opens up all these boxes of toys that are in the earth, and then those toys, which are now just like totally mentally effed, attack humans and make it so that humans have to flee Earth. And then...
And as a last fuck you, we build robots to crush them into cubes.
Right.
And just scatter them across the Earth.
Well, because the world in Wall-E is just one big landfill, right?
Yeah.
So... It makes sense. Yeah. My theory.
It does actually. There's precedent I think in literature.
Right.
Sorry, Adam.
No, talk about literature. So
everybody wants it. Let's talk. Do you know books?
I didn't see that one. No.
In 1001 Nights, then they talk about the genie, how the genie got stuck in the lamp. The genie was in the lamp for like 400 years, and during those years he was very hopeful. And then another 400 years, and during those years he was very, very sad. And then another 400 years, and during those 400 years he was just angry. Like, he turned. And that's why genies always fuck you when you try and, well, not literally, but like, genies will they'll take your wishes and try and turn it into something that will hurt you the most.
No one thought you were being literal.
I want to be clear.
You need to know what Swarm would do with a genie.
My first.
Did you rub my lamp? Did you bring me here? I'm gonna fuck you.
Great, because that's my first wish. Let's
just overly.
But so yeah, I can see the toys. The toys get stuck at the very, very bottom. They're partially now decomposed and everything, trying to work their way to the top. And having loved their own child, their own particular child, so much, and then losing that child, and then just getting more
right,
and more
probably
angry
had a solid
there.
500 years. Like, God, I miss playing. It was so much fun. And then year 501, let's just kill all humans, though.
Right.
How could they leave us here?
Yeah.
Well, but there's still some benign aspect to their feelings towards humans because they just send them off into spaceships. They like.
Oh, you don't think the humans ran away?
Oh, that's a great third act where they're like, no, but we can't lower ourselves to the level of humans.
They arrange some sort of environmental disaster or the appearance thereof.
And the newer toys are like, Mommy, where did my human go? And they're like, they're on a big ship upstate where they get everything they could ever need. They're cared for. They love it there.
Well, Jack, if your theory is true, which I'm certain it's not, and Toy Story does lead into Wall-E, that means at some point after the toys got rid of the humans, they just decided to become garbage again. Because there aren't a bunch of toy monsters running around in the Wall-E universe. They're just
That's
like, all right,
we
got
I think
all the
we Wall-E'd them.
Wonk. Oh, yeah.
We made a robot specifically for the goal of, like, destroying the toys.
Wall-E is just a super smart My Pal 2.
Right, like, it may be a T2 thing where we killed all the toys, or I guess they can't be killed, but we compacted them, but now Earth is unlivable because of the Great Toy Wars, and we have to ditch into space.
Right, so now all the toys are just cubes that Wall-E stacks all the time, and they're still talking to each other, like, remember playing? That was fun. Remember killing the humans? That was fun. This is probably the worst part. This is the worst thing. It's just being a cube that robot pushes around.
And now in space, when parents give their kids toys, they're like, you see this? You fear this. This is the great Satan.
But all inanimate objects are sentient, right? Or like,
yes.
Right. So cars.
Separate from the movie. That's just my theory about
life. Right? Anyone else? Cars? Not planes, I guess, is better.
Anyone else literally believe everything is sentient? Is that only Jack?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we've gotten the movies that are like the specific pockets of like, okay, this is the sentient toys, these are the sentient cars, these are the sentient cars for some reason. We're going to do that one again.
Planes make sense. Boats, wouldn't you know? Also sentient.
But this would be a good way to show them overlap.
Yeah, and if you throw in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, which I also want a sequel to, food is sentient. All food is sentient, which means either vegetarianism is not a thing, like just come to terms with your life is built on the death of other things, or everyone dies of starvation. Those are the only options.
Only the food that Flint Lockwood manufactures is sentient. Normal food that existed before his machine is not sentient.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't seen it, so you can't really argue.
Hey, good
thing. You know what's sad? I have.
I know.
It's okay, man.
Hey, really awesome segue alert. Speaking of things that can talk and are alive. Okay, I overshot it.
Nice.
A segue just comes rolling out from backstage. Dave jumps on it. And
I also wanted to talk about Beauty and the Beast, which is a movie with which you are all familiar. So I will now describe it at great length. I want to see the epilogue of that movie because he was a prince who became a beast who became a handsome prince again for this town that for the entirety of his and a lot of their lives did not acknowledge a ruler of any kind. And the fallout of Beauty and the Beast would be twofold. Well, threefold, actually. Fold one. He now has to rule all these people who are like, oh, that monster from before is our king now? All right. We seem to be fine. Like, we had laws and bakers and everything. And there was one bad guy and you threw him off a building. So it seems like things are pretty wrapped up here.
Yeah,
they don't want, and now they'll have to pay things. They'll have to like pay the king tax and
which there's no way he was collecting while he was a beast.
No, of course
holed up in the,
but now he needs to collect them because Fold the Second, he now has servants that he has to pay.
That
he has hundreds and hundreds of servants that, A, are like, hey, I'm not going to work for free anymore because I'm not a clock anymore. So you're going to have to pay me fair wages or I'm going to go literally anywhere else. And not just that, but like maintaining solid eye contact with people that he used to literally eat off of. He's like, you were one of the plays from before, right? I'm sorry.
Tries to drink out of Chip's hands. Yeah. Just like, force a habit, sorry, kid. I'm sorry.
And also just the third fold of just the relationship of Belle and the Beast now. This is, we talk about it all the time, that Belle fell in love with a huge beast. And like that's quite a feat, but she did it. And now he's just some like...
He took the first
like some
off.
Handsome guy. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm really into huge beasts that don't look or sound like
cool
you.
Who'll occasionally throw a plate at me.
Right.
Yeah. Then may as well, maybe have been a sentient plate, for all we know.
Yeah. And remember that that movie starts with her wanting something more than this provincial life. And now she's suddenly married to a guy or engaged to a guy who is like, I have a whole kingdom to run all of a sudden, and I have all these plates that are mad at me. So I'm really sorry, I can't take you on an adventure right now. I have all this responsibility. I need to be a good person, or someone will turn me into something shitty again.
And has to prove to the town that there's any reason for him to be their leader anymore. And you know he can't do anything else. Like, he's learned no skills, being the beast. And I have to imagine, I'll throw a fourth fold at you, or the river card, as we sometimes call it, in the movie industry for some reason. It's very confusing. He knows that there's an evil enchantress roaming the countryside, turning 11-year-old boys into beasts, and enchanting, like, the noblemen of the countryside who are running the country. That cannot stand. So he also needs to send an army against an evil enchantress. And I think there's your fourth act. There you go.
Then he finds her and kills the witch?
I just can't imagine that he would come out of that and be a prince again and be like, I bear no ill will towards the hag who came to my house and apparently made my parents never have existed and turned me into a beast for 10 years.
I actually think Disney has already resolved this fourth act. It's a really sad thing. If you're an eagle-eyed viewer like me or like a sociopath like me, you will have noticed that in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, another Disney movie that was released after Beauty and the Beast, there's a sweeping shot of the town in the beginning, and Belle is there. Belle has, at this point, left the Beast Kingdom and has, like, started over.
And things just didn't work out.
She's at least got a side piece down
right,
town.
Right, right. She's got the Hunchback. She's got her side piece Hunchback. And that's how that movie resolves itself. Because Esmeralda goes off with Kevin Kline, whatever his character's name is. Frollo dies. And then Belle is like, hey, I'm like really into super gross things, Hunchback.
Yeah, that's right. He's exactly her type. He's like, yeah, kiss me, and maybe I'll change into something else.
Yeah,
who knows?
No, I'm not like. No, he's like, I'm not like those other guys. You kiss me, and I'm just still this gross all the time.
She's like, sweet.
I also have to wonder at the end of Beauty and the Beast because the products, the things that live in the house with him,
products.
The products.
That's what Soren calls like actual servants too.
The products, we know that they sleep. We see Chip go to sleep, but we're not sure that they necessarily eat. But now there's all these people, which are bigger in general. All those things could hang out in the same room, but not all the servants possibly can. The only place they all fit is that one ballroom at the end.
Yeah.
So you've got all these people that now need a place to live and stuff to eat. And how are you going to keep all of them alive?
Oh, you also brought up at one point this thing that I was thinking of while you were talking, so I don't know what you said. In the grand battle with Gaston and LeFou and all of their buddies, the angry mob that they raise, the woman who is the wardrobe murders a guy. Like they're all fighting, and Lumiere, he's doing his like, I'm gonna burn you, and Cogsworth is fighting with swordplay, and the Bureau was like, I'm gonna do my thing, and just eats a guy doors. And then hours later is a woman again who's like, oh no.
Is that guy inside me? And now I'm on trial for murder, I assume, also. Yeah.
The king has to execute you. He has to put her to death. Like, I know.
Also, where do I keep all my clothes? This is so convenient. Now I just have boobs.
There's also still... I mean, they all went to the Beast's house. Sorry, I wasn't listening to you, Dan. There's a...
Thank you.
At the Beast House, his castle, he kills Gaston. They all go with Gaston. Gaston's the leader of this town. It's not that they don't like Gaston. Everyone in town, with the exception of Belle, loves that guy.
Soren's always been very sympathetic to Gaston.
Just hear me out. He's got a sock problem. He's got a hole in his socks, but you can't judge a man by that. He's a great guy.
That is his main.
His only real crime was being handsome and attempted murder.
Yeah. He brought them all up there to kill his beast, and none of them actually see him fall off this cliff by himself. For all they know, he went and fought the beast, and then the beast killed him. And now he's saying, hold on, I'd like you all to just serve me, if you'll just hear me out. Who's going to listen to that guy?
No, I think the town would be fine with it, because Gaston was objectively a rude person who made threats against Belle's father as well and tried to have him institutionalized.
Was fine with, if you'll recall.
Right. The town followed him because he was so handsome. That is, in this world, what we understand as a criteria for rule. So when he dies, they're all mad, and then they see the beast is a handsome prince, and they're like, oh, we got a different handsome guy. That's fine.
Oh, he couldn't have committed murder. Yeah. Look at him. He's beautiful.
As long as we still have one quarterback here, we'll be okay.
Since we're on Disney ragging, which I love doing, I want to jump back to the genie again and just point out briefly that Disney doesn't believe that we have free will, in my opinion, because in Aladdin, the genie makes pop culture references because you couldn't stop Robin Williams from referencing whatever the hell he wanted to. You just recorded and cut it up. But that implies in the universe that the genie has a knowledge of all time, unless we're going to get into some nerd shit like Agrabah exists in a pocket dimension, which I think we talked about on the site or something, or on an after hours.
Yeah. No, but we're not going to get into some nerd shit like that. Not on this podcast.
No. We'll stay in the cool territory of whether the genie proves or disproves predestination. The genie in like 1200 AD or some other more accurate time that I could have said that Aladdin might have taken place, he knows that there will inevitably be a Disney corporation that produces a character called Goofy, and they'll make a plush hat of Goofy so that he can come back wearing it and be like, you get it? I'm wearing a Goofy hat.
Sick joke, right?
And
you'll get in the car on the way home in 4,000 years.
That means that is the future. There's no possibility that anything could deviate from that. So there's no, like, everything is set in time, and the genie is Dr. Manhattan, and that's why he's blue, and you can see his dick if you look carefully. As is Merlin, for the same reason. But that's boring to just say another movie with the
Merlin
same
is also blue? Or you can see his dick? Why do you...
Yeah, you gave the bird thing!
You gave us so much information and then said, as is Merlin.
Merlin also constantly makes references to things from the 20th century. However, he ages backwards, so there's like room for fudging. But Benjamin Button could make a good Sword in the Stone sequel, if you think about it. Or like a mediocre, boring Sword in the Stone sequel. Yeah.
Just let it pass. Pretend like you know what he's talking about.
This is the one I saw, you guys!
Have you seen the movie Gravity?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. It was funny because only one person applauded and everyone else went, So in the movie Gravity, it's astronauts who all of a sudden get taken out by all this space debris that's just orbiting the planet. And it's taking out everything in its path. And she, Sandra Bullock, spoiler alert, eventually gets back to Earth. But everything's not fine at that point, because now all of our satellites are gone. All of our satellites, every country's satellites are all gone, because they're all orbiting in roughly the same area, and now they're all completely wiped out. So now we're all in the dark as far as those are concerned, and that includes everything that you own. That's cell phones. I don't know anything beyond that.
Do any of us? Sad statement on society.
He said while wearing a Fitbit.
Oh my god!
That speaking into a piece of technology.
It includes all GPS.
And I love that she's going to go back she'll return to NASA to explain what's going on. Like, you guys be really proud. I fulfilled like a hero's journey. Like, I had this arc. A lot of personal growth. I started out and I was like, I'm not going to open up. And then by the end, I was opening up. And they're like, we thought you were dead and we don't care.
There's so many worse things happening.
We're NASA. We're completely technology, whatever the words are. We like technology here at NASA, they would have said.
I think that's our slogan.
Yeah.
I do like her going back to everyone in a panic and her being like, we have to find this Inuit guy. He was really helpful while I was out there. I think you're getting a dog.
Is that crazy, guys? Should I get a dog? It's completely insane. You should not get a dog.
But like, however they normally locate astronauts, probably with GPS. She's just going to be like stranded there. It's going
to
be.
So she
like,
also has to walk through the desert, presumably.
It's a jungle. Yeah, it's a
jungle. Yeah. Barefoot, with a little Peter Pan haircut. I don't know.
It's not going to hurt.
That was needlessly catty.
Such a bitch. Yeah, and America's screwed without satellites. Someone's going to take a shot at us because. Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing. You immediately lose your Iron Dome or whatever I assume we have.
Yeah,
because I live in a naive sense of security that doesn't actually exist. Hey, you seen Usual Suspects? It's just good is all.
No, really good point.
We've talked about before just how bad at his job Agent Kuyan is to not understand what's going on or not immediately catch verbal Kent. I should explain, because not everyone immediately shouted, yes, I've seen Usual Suspects
Everybody's
in unison.
Seen Usual Suspects, right?
Okay, then I won't, because, man, that's a tough one to just go right. One time in Guatemala, my piss come out like snot is my favorite line. That's neither here nor there. So, Verbal Kent does all this great acting, and that's all well and good. First of all, he could have just made up lies. Like, when you're lying, it doesn't have to be inspired by the room. You could just lie.
You had a buddy? What was his name? Oh, it was Officer Kuyan.
Yeah, exactly. And Kuyan gets a photo of him at the right time for the audience to be shocked, but at a terrible time for Kevin Spacey because he's only several blocks from the building at that point. So there's many reasons that Agent Kuyan, immediately after Usual Suspects, is after Kevin Spacey and knows who Kevin Spacey is. So that sets you up for a good fugitive movie where the fugitive is Kaiser Soze, which is awesome. The only change I'd make is Dave Kuyan's such a bad detective, I think. A better detective should immediately come in, also played by Kevin Spacey, and take over the case.
No, no, man. You've already got Detective Gus Fring is in that franchise already. So the next movie is Giancarlo Esposito. Because it really seems like Kuyan gives up the case at the end. Like he goes out, walks outside, doesn't immediately see Kaiser Soze, and he's like, well, beaten by the best. And just like goes away.
Better go clean up my mug.
And it's clear that Soze or Kent is super proud of like acting his way out of the situation because he does like, oh, did you see how I limped? Guy that drives my limo? Oh, I was so method. So I can only imagine he's gonna be doing wacky disguises. He's gonna be doing accents, you know, trying to infiltrate society.
So it's Kaiser Soze undercover as an FBI agent and he still fools Agent Kuyan? He's like, now I'm your boss.
He's hunting himself.
You made all those names up.
Well, I assume because you want to stay true to the franchise, it still has to be the format of a guy in a room describing something based on the things in the room.
I do like the thought of him being in a desert and just being out of shit. Yeah. Like, he has nothing around him that he can use.
Right, I went by the third movie for Kuyan to, like, I've got you now. He gets him in a room with nothing in there. And he's like,
why so? Tricks.
Who killed the mayor? Oh, ah, fuck me. What?
A room with just pictures of him. And details of his life that are accurate. On the bottom of the coffee cup, it says his real name. You're fucked, man. We got you. This is your Magneto plastic prison. Speaking of crappy detectives, no, he was all right. Bob Hoskins in Roger Rabbit. I just really want to get to this Roger Rabbit one because it's the only one that I think isn't just like undermining the thing, but I like... It's the one of all the things we've said that I desperately actually want to see the movie. So in Roger Rabbit, we prove that cartoons, as we all grew up knowing, are essentially immortal, other than the dip. They can't be killed through conventional means. And we also learn that they have a mental state, and they're capable of going crazy or becoming evil. So I don't see how there's not some equivalent of like a Mutant Registration Act for cartoons eventually, or there's not basically... I want to see a movie that uses that animation meets live action technique, but the cartoons are like dropping safes on live action people, and they're just like Final Destination 2 just splattering out live action. Like the cartoons just waging war.
There's a lot to unpack with Roger Rabbit because the cartoon that plays a baby in all baby cartoons is like an adult man.
Who's a celebrity.
Looks like, yeah, he's a celebrity, but he looks like a baby. So there aren't actual babies there, apparently. They're just like this guy who, his tune thing, like, oh, you're a rabbit? Well, I look like a baby.
So that's the thing. That's it seems life. Like cartoons can't reproduce and they don't age, or we see no evidence of that. So their advantage is they're immortal, but our advantage is we just have to stop drawing them, and now there's a limited number. And we have Dip, so you're going to have like armies of cartoons going against tanks that fired Dip. You got Bob Hoskins having to hurl Roger Rabbit into a pool of Dip going, "You are the chosen one!" Stuff like that. It's going to be great.
We have another means by which to kill them, and that's with laughter. They also die when they laugh
too hard. To death.
And then they become ghosts.
So,
because cartoon heaven is real.
Sorry, it's just true. People were really bummed about that. They're like, I want the cartoons to stay dead when they're dead. I don't want there to be an afterlife for cartoons.
Well, yeah, Bob Hoskins loses his partner to real death.
Yeah.
But none of the cartoons ever have to suffer that same fate. Oh, that's sad.
He's like, yeah, I miss my partner sometimes. Rob's just like, I can't connect to that at all. That means nothing to me. You know, we have a saying in cartoon heaven, there's no live action heaven. So enjoy it. Dan, do you want to talk about your bulletproof observation? Because I think that actually leads to a pretty good sequel.
Death the movie
Death Proof. I'm sorry.
Oh,
Death
for a second there, I thought we were going to Bulletproof Monk. Yeah, and I was very excited.
So you're all familiar with Death Proof. There's these women who get in a car and they're chased by Kurt Russell, and they eventually kill Kurt Russell, and it's great and it's girl power. The way they got this car, they got this car by trading their friend Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who's the dimmest of the group, and she happens to be dressed as a cheerleader. So they go to this house with this really nice car and this super creepy guy, the creepiest guy you can imagine, and they're like, we really want to take your car for a ride. We'll leave our friend here for you as collateral for this car that we're going to drive around. And they drive around the car. And then, oh no, it's Kurt Russell! So we completely forget about that cheerleader because there's this amazing car chase that happens, and Zoe Bell is hanging on at the front of the car the entire time. Eventually they kill Kurt Russell, and it's so big and fun and happy that there's a freeze frame of them jumping up in the air and celebrating. And then we end the freeze frame, Rosario Dawson does a high kick and smashes his face into the ground and he's dead. And the movie ends, and we're like, man, what a strong feminist message. And I really wanted the after credit scene to just be poor Mary Elizabeth Winstead in this house still with this creepy guy who was told, like, you are mine in exchange for this car. The car is destroyed, and they are in the middle of the desert now.
You realize we're in a movie directed by the same guy that did the Zeke and the Gimp scene, right?
Yeah.
But see, I think it actually makes for a great movie because it's a girl power universe. And I think if you stay true to that tone, you get like Kill Bill meets Black Snake Moan, or like Kill Bill meets Deliverance. Because there's no way she's not going to get out of there.
Right.
So she has to brutally murder the hillbilly and
no,
all this.
No, here's what I'm hoping actually happens. I think that, because her friends are never coming back, but she will now, like, I don't think he does anything horrible to her when they leave. I think he says, so as per our agreement, and then she realizes, that's what my friends did? Fuck those friends, they're the worst. This is not an agreement. And then they destroy his car, so he's like, fuck those friends indeed, I'm on your side. And they just
team
become like a Bonnie and Clyde thing where they just go around ruining her friends.
Like undoing the previous movie's events.
It's admittedly half-baked right now.
Yeah, I like that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have we already talked too much about the Harry Potter civil war between the wizard world and the...
Here today? No, I don't think we've touched on it at all.
About it. My theory is that the Harry Potter books and movies that we've seen are basically the last days of the wizarding world before basically muggles overtake them in terms of just technology. Like, the wizards have no idea how to use a computer. They have no... Like, they're just completely hopeless. And
stupid wizards.
They're very much, like, based on a time in the distant past when there were castles, because that's when they were so superior to, like, anything that science had.
Like, they're obsessed with their high school years.
Right.
Which is the medieval era.
The high school years of the world, yeah.
Right, exactly. It's gotta be only a matter of time before the muggle world, aka the UN and the president and all the armies, decide, wait, so the fate of the universe is constantly being threatened by these people who don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like, the Ministry of Magic is, like, just all over the place. Like, they're overthrown by a couple of kids who, like, have a really half-assed plan.
Right, they're very, very often spunk is rewarded there, where they're like, right. You broke all the rules, but, oh, you scamps.
And, right. Yeah. And it's implied
there's more magic or whatever.
The two governments are aware of each other at some high level.
Yes.
But nevertheless, I doubt that the U.S. government, at least, is fully aware that they have a Voldemort problem and they just, like, send children at it. Because I don't think we'd be okay with that. So I think there's got to be a wizard Edward Snowden at some point who's like, hey, humans, no wizard will read this because they can't use the internet. You will. The wizards should not be trusted. They cannot handle their shit. You need to come in here with some Blackhawk choppers.
Off those Neville Longbottom to hide in Sweden for a while.
First thing, take out all their communication lines. Just kill all the owls. That's how we'll start.
The only way they communicate over long distances.
It's only a matter of time before the humans, the Americans, find out about them because I think the book and movie series works because the final events of the final book are supposed to happen in like 1997, right? Thank you.
Are there American wizard schools that are just really shitty?
We decided, yeah, they're just really shitty.
Well, that means cell phone technology is just sort of taking off. Yeah. So, I mean, you're immediately going to have cell phone videos on YouTube of people flying around and stuff. There's no way that even if the human government wants to politely just let there be wizards, that's not an option. Everyone knows about wizards.
You just watch people disappearing into walls and train stations on YouTube.
Right. Yesterday I watched a video of an anchor from ESPN insulting a tow truck operator. So I would absolutely find videos of wizards. There's no way. She's in the middle of nowhere and like, you're a college dropout and I'm an entitled bitch.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I can watch that. What other videos watch? Oh, this kid just shot that guy with no nose. Cool, that's objectively more interesting.
And aren't the Dementors still out there, like, eating souls? Like, they just, like, forgot to tie that up, so they're just gonna, like, sweep through London.
It's not one of those things where it's, you cut off a snake at the head and then the whole snake dies. Like, once they get rid of Voldemort, the Dementors don't just immediately disappear.
All I know is they cut ahead to later in Harry Potter's life and everything's fine.
Yeah.
So I think you're just supposed to assume whatever had to happen to make everything fine, everything's fine.
Right, the Dementors just find out that evil lost. I'm like, okay, well, I've always kind of wanted to get into fishing in Canasta. So
they need engineers for that magic train for some reason, even though it's a magic train. Maybe I'll do that.
Wait, but when
these chocolate frogs are going to make themselves.
Even though they easily could.
These Dementors that are probably like the Nazis at the end of Inglourious Basterds with the swastikas on, where they're just trying to have a normal life, and everyone's like, you clearly used to be a Dementor, and I know that. I'm like, yeah, I know, that was a different time.
Apt pupil with a Dementor teaching a young wizard to be evil might be good. Yeah. And he finds out, oh, man. You knew Voldemort?
I hope you guys have watched a lot of movies, because we went broad spectrum today.
But in the end, when they show the future where everything's great, like, he's just, like, dressed like a dude, right? He's not, like,
he's a relatively normal, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just having his life, and he's happily married.
Like
he's like a dad,
I feel
like he's the born, like, one day he'll be like, I need it.
Well, I think he like, did his main thing that he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And, like, he peaked very early. And, like, comes back to America with no skill, or England with no skills. Like, you know, I killed this wizard. I'm like, okay, what about, like, what, did you go to school anymore?
Can you use Excel?
Can you read? Yeah. You killed the only bad wizard that was around.
He fell in love with the lady that the story was clearly pointing that he was supposed to fall in love with the other lady, and that's good enough.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking
about. No, I'm not sure.
All right, well, do I have time to save it with one about Third Rock from the Sun? Because I feel like everyone's been watching.
How are people chopping at the bit to some theories?
Answer in a round of mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they just want to participate. That's meaningless information. I don't know what that means.
Why don't you guys line up at the mic while Michael redeems everything he said today with one last theory?
All the bridges I just burned. Well, I just think it's very quick, so this is perfect. I just binged all of Third Rock, great show, but it begins and ends with pointing out that their main thing is they're on a mission here to observe us for some reason, and their mission is completed at the end, and they return to their alien planet. Well, something's going to happen after that. Like, the alien mission is complete. So I just think there's room for series where anything.
Right, I'm sure their overlords will be like, so what did you find? Oh, man, she was a woman, and she dated Wayne Knight for a while. He's like, ah, it was crazy.
They're like, so they must be destroyed. Okay, we got it. Well, I tried, Jack.
No, you didn't. Third Rock, definitely the most popular and accessible.
Solid and ultra.
Was that not a popular show? 6 seasons, can I get a round of mm-hmm?
Yeah.
For Third Rock?
Yes, it was a popular show in 1994.
All right.
This young woman wants to tell us why we're wrong about Harry Potter.
So I'm going back to Prestige or whatever that movie was. I'm still pretty sure you're lying to me about David Bowie playing Tesla, but if you aren't, What I'm like to imagine as a sequel for that, I don't care about yours, sorry.
Next person.
Is that Tesla, Bowie Tesla, clones himself and then just like tells them nothing about his past and then just sends them off, and Bowie becomes different people, and one of Bowie Tesla becomes actual David Bowie.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So he goes off and like one of him just like becomes like, I don't know, like a military dude. Right. Like just multiple different
It's boys from Brazil, but instead of Hitler, it's all David Bowie.
Yeah, like, and you, like it's Orphan Black, except it's Bowie.
Yeah, that's a more
Tesla.
Timely reference. That's
Do you know
true.
Why all of this works? Is because if Tesla becomes lots of people, one of whom becomes David Bowie, David Bowie eventually has
yeah,
a
he
son.
Yeah, he has to go back.
Who eventually has a son who makes the movie Moon, which is about clones.
Yeah.
Where did he get that idea from?
And one of them just like sets up shop in a labyrinth and collects babies.
Yeah. See, and then every role that David Bowie's ever played is actually different Bowie Teslas.
Different Teslas.
Yeah.
Part of the Tesla.
I love it.
Army clone.
And the cars are also Bowie.
The what?
The cars themselves. Like in the movie Pixar Cars, like the Tesla cars are Bowie himself.
I just checked it out. It doesn't work.
You're in the pocket of Big Tesla, aren't you?
Tesla.
All right. Thank you so much, all of you, for this honor.
Awesome idea.
Thank you, absolutely.
Hey, how's it going?
See, that's how you redeem yourself. I need to learn from her.
Thank you.
So I've always had this thought about watching, and some movies have kind of solved it, any sort of shaky cam kind of found footage film. So you have Cloverfield, which has been one of my favorites, only because in the beginning it's like, this is a government tape that we found, and you're watching through the tape, and it skips around. But more recently, I've seen ones like As Above, So Below, as well as The Pyramid, and some that try to make use of multiple cameras. And this is kind of a shaky cam, found footage-wide conspiracy, because I want to see the movie about the guy who goes in after all of this stuff happens, finds all the tapes and then edits them together. Yeah. Because there's a guy that nobody knows is going in, and he's going and he's getting all these tapes from Blair Witch or whatever, goes through the woods, goes into this pyramid that supposedly was supposed to have fallen in on itself, goes to hell. And has supposed to
and is anyone
all
who knows
tapes.
Like a career editor, this guy is at home in his bathrobe, smoking a bowl, reviewing footage and going, oh, the afterlife's real. What do you know? I use that take. It's weird.
Okay. He's got such a sharp eye, too, because you look at the video and it's like, Zach's birthday. Huge monster. Good. I was.
Let's tag
any
that.
Any reasonable person would have stopped at like hour three of Zach's birthday.
That's a gold take.
I really don't value my time at all.
He really had to, yeah, with Blair Witch, because it's true. It's a bunch of edited together multiple cameras, so that guy must have just, once they found those tapes and got all the mud out of them and everything.
I like to think that one was a vanity project by the witch herself, right? She made them all stand in the corner, edited a rough cut together, made them give notes, edited a second cut,
and you have
then killed them.
And you have to give him props for finding all these tapes, being able to sit through what is probably tens, if not hundreds, of hours of footage, and also not dying himself in the process.
See, like, his editorial decision is because in Cloverfield there's like clear love arcs with T.J. Miller's character and Lizzie Caplan's character, and the government is probably like, just show us as much footage of the monster as possible. Like,
will they? Won't they? It's a human story.
She likes Superman. He likes Superman. I think this is what Cloverfield is really about.
And also that he made the editorial decision to put the Ferris wheel stuff at the end where you see it crashing into the ocean. That he was like, oh, cool. That'll be my denouement.
Should have opened with the thing. Or even the fact that this is nominally for the purposes of the government to be like, oh, okay, this proves that there's this monster and here's what it's like. But he's like, if I cut it right like this, it's going to be so fucking scary.
Yeah. You're going to shit the
president and secretary of defense are going to shit their pants.
You know, standing in the background watching them watch it. Yeah.
He doesn't want to educate the government without scaring them.
Thank you very much. Think about like what he cut out. Like what he was like.
Decided wasn't important.
This is too muddled. Yeah.
There's a bunch of, he just liked the monster so much, there's a bunch of footage of the monster like tripping over shit.
Yeah.
No one needs to see that.
Yeah. This is hurting the Cloverfield monster's branding. We need to.
The head of the Statue of Liberty looks so small. I think I can make that bigger.
Yeah. That's a great one. That's a great idea for a mockumentary. So yeah. You should make it.
Thanks, guys.
No. Oh, that was a good time, as I need to point out that anything said in this room is owned by the property of Crack.
We will copy it. We will make money off of it.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
What's your name? By the way, we should be asking everybody what their name is.
My name's Christine.
Other sites do that. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Christine. Crack.com owns your name now.
Okay, that's fine. So a sequel, this is something I actually used to think about a lot as a kid after I saw the movie Space Jam. Woo! I loved it as a kid. But something I always wanted to see and questioned afterwards was, I wanted to know, does Michael Jordan get scooped up by the government after showing up in a spaceship in a baseball stadium?
No, he comes out of retirement and scores more points than he ever has in his entire career.
It's witnessed to thousands of people. I kind of wanted to see like a sequel where the government comes, they take him, they question him, it takes a serious tone, it becomes almost like a Bourne situation, and he has to escape the government with the help of the Looney Tunes.
I would love that. And just through sheer luck, all the government facilities are built in such a way that like doing sweet dunks unlocks doors.
I'm so proud of you for knowing what a dunk is.
Thank you. Very supportive this episode.
It's so crazy how trusting the other basketball players, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson,
Muggsy Bogues.
I'm going to get there. And the tall one who actually sucks at basketball, Sean
Kemp.
Nope.
Bradley.
Sean Bradley?
No. 7'6".
Let's just call him Christine. Okay. We own that.
The tall guy. That Michael Jordan just shows up with Wayne Knight, who's getting a lot of play on this podcast today. He just shows up to these sad basketball players who are just hanging out at this court where they can't play anymore. And he's like, my friends, touch this basketball. And they're like, no, we're pretty sad for the rest of our lives. And then they all touch the basketball and they get their powers back. And they're immediately not like, what the fuck, Michael Jordan? Why did you have my talent in a bag this whole time? And now you just... But no, they're like, oh, cool, my power's back. Let's just play a quick pick.
Play again, yeah. I also like that Jordan came back and was like, I really like playing with aliens. I wish I could... All right, Wizards. That's fine. Wizards is close enough.
I play for the Wizards.
It was Sean Bradley. You're right. It was Sean Bradley.
Sorry. Irrelevant.
You just checked some pocket of your brain? And like,
I did.
Are the Moonstars aliens? Do they come from an alien planet?
They do. They come from a planet called Moron Mountain.
Then that, I feel like, but that also has to be involved in the sequel.
No, they decide to stay. They decide to stay and be Looney Tunes because they like that so much more than their wretched boss.
But I still feel like we as Earth would want to know more about a new alien civilization than just how their basketball team performs.
Right, I think we would tell the government, like, there's a whole universe of Looney Tunes that are like living within our world, and there's a nuke it all, just nuke everything. Kill Michael
Start
Jordan.
Start with a quick exhibition game and then just firebomb it.
That's how it ends.
I like that idea. That's awesome.
I love all Space Jam ideas.
Hi, my name is Maya.
Maya, hi.
Thank you, Maya.
Hi. So, heartbreaking. I always wanted a Galaxy 2 sequel. Like, God's Quest?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I always wanted a Galaxy 2 sequel. So, anyway, I mean, the ending of that movie, they crash land on the convention center with a giant spacecraft, and, you know, Tony Shalhoub marries the alien, and you end up, they get, like, a reboot of their series. So it's like, what the fuck happened?
Right, yeah. The government didn't have any question for them. Like, he took out a gun and killed an actual alien
vaporized
in front of people. Every bit of that technology is something that we could study from, and they're like, you know what we should do? We should make a television show. And this time Sam Rockwell can be in it. He's great, right?
And they're not all like Nobel laureates, or I feel like their time would be completely taken up just repeating the account of what they'd seen, because every scientist on Earth just wants to know, all right, you're just a dumb actor, William Shatner, stand in, tell me everything that happened so that I can reverse engineer that shit and start building. Like, give me that gun. You shouldn't
right.
have that.
We also know that as far as like reboots go, they would feel really happy and bring their show back. They would cancel it after one season. There's no way people are like, oh, I'm not going to watch all these old people do this like throwback space show.
Yeah, it's basically the Enterprise reboot of Star Trek.
Right, like
it's
when they brought Battlestar Galactica back, they didn't bring the original cast. They brought all these young, sexy people, and they made a cool new show.
Well, I also want to see when Tony Shalhoub and his wife give birth to a baby that is, if you recall, their true forms in the movie.
Tentacle
monster. At least sometimes a tentacle monster, yeah. So raising a tentacle monster, I think, is going to be a unique challenge. That's like a sitcom.
I do feel like, right, that's Mad About You, the season when they had the baby, yeah. But except wildly different.
Can it all be solved by just having it take place in the Men in Black universe?
Yeah, so Tony Shalhoub can still be an alien again?
Right.
That works for me.
Yeah, right.
You're right.
The baby grows up to be the three Bobs or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
There is still that spaceship to deal with that's in the middle of a convention center.
There's that, and then there's the Omega 13 thing that, like, resets time by 13 seconds that's right. in that ship.
Oh, yeah, that device exists.
Oh, and it's in the ship that is there, so that device is on our
so time travel
so there's that. And then I always wondered about the crab monsters that I figured Michael Bay was inspired by for the Ninja Turtles, but...
Well, they end up playing basketball against the series of cartoon characters.
I hope that everything is solved.
I bet that show was just the government's deal with them when the government's like, you have this thing that reverses time by 13 seconds every time, and there's vaporizer, and they're like, we want a show. Go make your fucking show. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah, it's like the end of Burn After Reading. Yeah. Just give them their show, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, guys.
Howdy.
Hey, I'm Mario.
Mario. It's actually
the record,
Mario.
Mario, that's kind of not fun. That's fine, I guess. Real quick, my pitch for the new Galaxy Quest show would be Justin Long and his cronies take that ship and they go to space where they can actually do some stuff.
Oh, because they know what's going on. Yeah.
That would be super entertaining to me.
Yeah, that's true. The people who are in Star Trek do not deserve a space adventure. The people who watch Star Trek deserve a space adventure. That would be a more satisfying movie.
No way nerd fulfillment fantasy of mine at all. But yeah, so we've had like 30 years of entertainment derived from struggles during the Cold War, right? And spy movies and all these things. Hunt for Red October is essentially
Jack's like, Cold War II, I'm totally for it.
So here's the better
Let's
part.
Bomb the bastards.
So what if we have a Cold War that works exactly like the Cold War, except it's between robots and people in the Matrix? And you can do like 100 movies off of that topic alone.
Excellent pitch inflection.
Thank you. That's
robots
that's my elevator
and humans.
Pitch, yeah.
Did you?
The Matrix.
I'm still trying to find the movie. Did you pitch a sequel to the Cold War?
No.
It's Cold War kids, if you will.
As far as I can tell, at the end of the Matrix, Neo's deal is like, robots stop killing people, people will try to figure out a way to like coexist. So instead of, you know, crucial linchpin where all the robots die, or the war keeps going like in Starship Troopers, this time you have this like conflict that still exists, but they've turned off all the guns. So now it's just like uneasy tension thing where you have these like, you know, like you have robot politicians making deals with human politicians who are still, you know, alive in the
I'm sure this is a great idea, and this is not your fault, but I recently wrote and pitched a very detailed Matrix episode of After Hours to them, and they're like eyes glazed over because of just how convoluted the Matrix is, and I finally understand, you guys. It's not you. It's that the plot of the Matrix
was so good.
The plot of the Matrix is just a monkey's fist of bullshit, like mythological bullshit. There's
the
nothing
only movie
in
where,
it.
Like, you know, Luke pulls up the Death Star and they win, or you know, they keep fighting the aliens. But this is the only movie where they're like, new problem. And I would love to see any number of movies about that new problem. How do robots and people like figure out how to not kill each other?
I'd love to see any robot versus humans movie that's not who would win in a fight.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of
right. How do they coexist?
Yeah.
And you can still do Sweet Kung Fu, probably.
Yeah.
But Short Circuit already made that movie.
Yeah. Well, I do want the post Matrix where robots are just living on Earth now and there are like factions of humans that are racist against robots in a very misguided way. Where there's like, I don't like the robots at all. I think they're inferior, and the robots are like, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hey guys, I'm Kyle.
Hey Kyle. Is that a Back to the Future hat?
Yeah, it's 2015 final. I've been holding this for like 30 years. So, Jack, real quick on your Toy Story idea, I think you should look into at what point are toys actually sentient and conscious, because it appears in Toy Story 2 that in the toy store, all those toys and boxes are not ready to go yet, is from what I remember. So what point
so they're activated by a human
is that
love?
Do they have to be human? Like, do they, or is it like
oxygen? What you're suggesting?
They don't gain sentience until they emerge from the box, much like a human baby.
And they
and once they come out, then you have to train them up. You have to teach them everything about the world.
Right. And then if you put that baby in a box at 7 years old and just buried that box 400 feet underground, and that baby was just awake and aware for the whole time.
Yeah, it'd be awful.
If toys that are still in the box are not yet, like, that means you can open a fresh toy and brainwash it into being on the human side. You know, we could have our G.I. Joes going against the ones that are like, you sell out G.I. Joe's, you know, we've been moldering in the ground.
Yes. Also, yes. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait, guys, there's a guy there.
That was not even what I wanted to fully discuss. I just wanted to,
more importantly,
I don't like Harry Potter, but I wanted to bring it up. I'm always very curious, and I would like to see something about the library. So he's in the library, and the one book he picks out is this book that screams at you. So I was wondering what the wizard fiction universe or the wizard writing world is like. Why that's a book, and how many more books are like that, and what is the practicality of having a book that screams at you?
Right, there's just the wizard version of Stephen King sleeping? Where the book screams, and he finishes like just like, ah!
I feel like that's
another
like,
chart topper.
I feel like that's naked lunch. That's the naked lunch.
I also want to know at what point a painter painting a portrait is like, oh God, it started moving. Jesus. Every time it tips over and I, oh, hi, how are you? I'm painting you.
All right, so I think we have to end this. Unfortunately, it's been a lot of fun talking to you guys and hearing your awesome theories.
Yeah, we should thank UCB Sunset for hosting
thank
us.
You
yeah,
so thank much. You so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Earwolf, for organizing this.
And thank you, Brett Rader, our producer.
Oh, yeah.
And now, Soren had something he wanted to say.
All right, so I want just reach for the stars. Really just go out there and be yourselves. And don't let anyone tell you you have to change.
All right, that was our episode live at UCB. So the Pixar Easter egg, when Wally is rolling around in his bachelor pad full of cultural artifacts, you can see on one of the shelves the T-Rex from the Toy Story gang. And at one point, he looks into the camera and makes a throat-slicing gesture at the human audience. No, that doesn't happen. His arms aren't long enough to do that, dummy. But that's one of those Easter eggs from Pixar movies that I like to imagine is telling us some broad, sprawling story in the background of their movies. You just need to open your eyes, man. All right, on to footnotes. First of all, big ups to Ethne, which is the name of the audience member who got on mic first and came up with that David Bowie sequel universe theory that was probably my favorite one anyone came up with, and we didn't get her name, so I thought I'd mention her here. But yeah, if Nikola Bowie Tesla was creating impossible magic in the 1890s. Every movie that David Bowie has ever appeared in, and as Dan mentions, his own son's movies, are all in play in some grand multiverse. Okay, on to the music. We heard Damn That Valley by US Girls, just a dope song that was one of Pitchfork's best new tracks this week and is just right in my wheelhouse with those reverby female vocals and kind of reminds me of House of Balloons, Glass Party Girls, one of my favorite tracks of the past decade or so by The Weeknd. Also a Canadian resident, US Girls is an expat living in Canada. And speaking of Canada, we were up there last week in Calgary at what is essentially Canada's Comic-Con. And what a lovely group of people to be an expat amongst. Thanks, Calgary, for welcoming us. We had a lot of fun. Up next, we listen to the Kanye West, Vic Mensa collabo, You Mad. I had to play some Yeezy because, I don't know, I like this song. But I'm putting this together the morning after Bruce Jenner told Diane Sawyer that the most supportive and accepting member of his family was Kim, because Kanye came up with some big inspirational speech about being yourself. So big ups to Kanye. I know he's a fan and avid listener to this podcast, so I thought I'd give him a little much needed positive reinforcement. Guy needs a little ego boost every once in a while. And part of me wanted to ride out on See You Again featuring Charlie Puth. A terrible name, which you may know as the hardest you've ever cried during a rap song, aka the song at the end of Fast 7. Here's a little sample of that. Damn, who knew all the planes we flew, good things we've been through, that I'll be standing right here talking to you. Yeah, I wanted to ride out on that because this episode's about sequels, and that franchise has got better from 5 to 7 than it ever was before, and good for it. But I heard this song Riders by Hudson Mohawk this week, And I can't stop listening to it, and it just sounds really cool. And I want this podcast to sound cool more than I want the music to be thematically coherent. So we're going to ride out on Riders by Hudson Mohawk. You can hear Wiz Khalifa ghost rap Vin Diesel's feelings for Paul Walker on your own time and cry quietly. Thanks for listening. Back next week with more podcast. Guys, if you're still hanging around, Xero, spelled X-E-R-O, is the online accounting software and platform for your small business. With Xero, it doesn't matter if your small business is brick and mortar or online, because Xero was born in the cloud and built in the cloud, but not out of clouds. It's a real business and not a cloud business. I don't even know what I'm saying. Basically, it means that you can manage your accounting anywhere, anytime, on any device. Mac, PC, iOS, Android, they do it all. Sign up for a free 30-day trial at xero.com/podcasts to manage your invoicing and get paid faster.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. Oh, oh, oh. The wolf dead.